This is the Adam Gold Show.
We will scratch your Panthers itch, which is at this point poison sumac.
It's a rash.
It is terrible. It's spreading all over your body, and it's very uncomfortable. But we'll deal with it because, you know, you have to deal with it. So hopefully they'll get better. I don't know when, but hopefully they will get better. So Major League Baseball's regular season came to an end yesterday. The playoffs start tomorrow. We're going to talk about that a little bit today. Although not guest-related, I have some thoughts on a few things. New format. Tomorrow we'll break it down, so to speak, with Elliot Johnson, our baseball analyst, former big leaguer. I think 75% of Elliot's teams that he played for are in the playoffs.
Wow.
So what better expert could you find than Elliot Johnson? That'll be tomorrow on the program, but we got a lot of football to talk about because it's a kind of a weed out weekend in the ACC. Kind of one of those types of weekends. We're going to start separating, even though we are early in the conference season, we're going to start separating things starting this week. All right, let's get started and see how much we can get done before we talk to Darren. All right, so we got brackets. Two different sports. I should have gone sprockets. Do you even know what sprockets is, Victoria?
I can't say I do.
Okay. It's an old SNL thing, right? It was Mike Myers and who else did it?
Seems like something I should definitely check out then.
Yeah, sprockets. It's very good. It was good. All right, for the first time in baseball's postseason, that sport is giving us actual brackets. Sort of. Like, these are real brackets. I guess you could say that they used to be brackets even when it was just five teams, but you had a wild card game, and wild card was going to play the top seed and blah, blah. So it really weren't real brackets. Now we got brackets because we got four series playing into two. So we've got brackets, and they are static. They do not move. So there is no reseeding. And I'm excited about this for a lot of reasons. I mean, people can gamble on this. It's not quite like the NCAA tournament bracket pool, but it is fun. Here's Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, who I have argued doesn't really like baseball. In fact, I've said he hates baseball, but he does seem like he likes it now. And I believe this was the interview with Mike Greenberg, right? This is from the interview with Greeny on Get Up, and he thinks that the new format has made even the regular season better.
Well, I think the way the Mets and the Braves played down the stretch, the series, particularly last weekend, shows the format is good. It keeps everybody playing all the way through the end of the year in order to get that bye in the first round, which is great. We certainly saw it from an attendance perspective. We had weekends in September, overall attendance numbers that we haven't seen since 2014. And that down the stretch, making September better, really was an important goal of the postseason format.
I'm not entirely sure the format had anything to do with that, but, I mean, because we don't know. But Mets and Braves was certainly exciting. There wasn't a lot of drama. We knew who was going to make the playoffs, pretty much. Aside from maybe the race between the Brewers and the Phillies for the wild card. We knew who was going to make the playoffs for a while. The American League at one point looked like there were like six teams for two spots. And then in the span of maybe 5 days, we went down and, oh, well, we pretty much know who's going to make the playoffs now. The Orioles were the last team with a chance, and they were, for about the last 3 weeks of the season, about four or so games back. So probably not going to make that up unless you almost win out. The real drama was who was going to win the NL East. And as it turned out, it was the Atlanta Braves. Real quick, here's how the brackets look. Because we have brackets, and that's cool. On the AL side, Houston is the top seed. They will take on the winner of the 4-5 series as the Blue Jays host the Mariners. That's interesting. I mentioned yesterday those two teams entered the American League at the same time. 1976, I believe, was the year. And Seattle is going to be a little bit of a pain, I think, for Toronto. And I would say that Seattle might even be a little bit of a pain for Houston. I think Seattle's plucky. Yankees are the number two seed. Rays are in Cleveland this weekend for that series. Winner heads to the Bronx. NL and top-seeded Los Angeles, the Dodgers, 111 wins this year. And they dealt with injuries, and they had 111 wins. They await the winner of the weekend set between the Padres and the Mets in Queens. I kept saying this is the fallout for not winning the division was A, Padres aren't a joke. B, Dodgers are next.
They should have listened to you.
They never listened to me. Anyway, so that's one series. Atlanta won 101 games, just like the Mets did. They both won 101. They will host either the Cardinals or the Phillies, whoever escapes that weekender in St. Louis. All four series start Friday. They all start Friday. They are all best of three. And there's just one day off before the division round starts. All four of those series start Tuesday. Those are best of five series, 2, 2, and 1 in the wild card round, the first round. All of these series are played in one location. The higher seed hosts. So there's no guarantee of you getting a home game, which that's fine. You still have an opportunity. And last I checked, teams were allowed to win on the road. There's not a ban against it. So should be, I think, a lot of fun. I've got some thoughts on who will advance. I sneaky like the Braves to repeat in the National League.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Braves are going to win it, but I kind of like the Braves to repeat in the National League. I think they have a lot of, we'll just say, gumption. I like the cut of their jib. All right. An auction house in California has made an offer on home run ball number 62. They offered the possessor of the ball, whatever his name, Corey Yeomans, I think is his name.
Yes.
He works in finance in the Dallas area. They offered him $2 million for the ball. He has not responded to the offer. According to the auction house, they sent him an email and a text message. Wow. How they got Corey's cell phone, don't know, but they have not received either a counter offer or a response from Corey Yeomans. So, remember I said this yesterday. I believe my understanding is that ball is worth about $5 million. To me, this proves that the ball is worth about $5 million because the auction house isn't going to offer $2 million for a ball that they're going to sell for $2
million. No. That's not how this works.
So, this is, if anybody out there has ever sold something at a pawn shop, if you sell an item at a pawn shop, when you walk in, if a similar item is there and it's listed for $100, don't expect more than like $30.
No.
For what you're going to sell.
What's it worth? Split it in half.
I would think more than in half. Mm-hmm. Anyway, here's Rob Manfred, because the ball is significant at 62. And Greenberg was trying to push him towards what the real record is. So here's Manfred on that.
Well, the record books say what they say. I think that over the history of the game, there have been different eras. The ball performed differently. The equipment was different. And I think the best way to handle it is let fans make their own judgment as to what records are most significant to them.
And this is what we sort of said yesterday. Rob did it in a TV soundbite form. But the record is 73. Judge hits 62, which, by the way, is the American League record. Nobody in the American League has ever hit more than 61 before Aaron Judge. And it is fair. It's not an end of discussion, as we were told by several people. You can't stop people from forming or having and espousing an opinion on the issue of performance-enhancing drugs. And again, don't make an assumption that everybody in baseball is currently clean. Exhibit A, Fernando Tatis Jr. for the San Diego Padres. That's, I mean, anybody can, whether accidental or otherwise, anybody can be found to have used something they shouldn't have used. But the issue is up for debate, depending on your point of view. And it's okay. I don't have to agree with it. I don't have to whatever. We're all adults. We can handle the conversation. Nobody should cry about it. If you want to recognize Aaron Judge as the official, as your home run king, go ahead. I ain't going to stop you. It's fine. It's okay to have that opinion. It's okay to have this discussion. Moving on. All right, we started this with the expansion of baseball's playoffs from 5 to 6. There are rumors, not even rumors. There are discussions now about expanding the NCAA men's basketball tournament. Actually, it's not just the NCAA men's basketball tournament. The NCAA Transformation Committee, they didn't float. They discussed all NCAA tournament fields. So it doesn't just mean men's basketball. It could mean women's basketball, lacrosse, volleyball, whatever, all of them. Expanding to include as many as 25% of eligible schools. There are 363 schools playing Division I men's basketball. 25% of that is 90. It's actually 90 point something, but we'll just round to 90. I don't think we're going to go to 90 for men's basketball. But here's the way I do think it will work out. And I've talked about this before. We currently have a first four in Dayton. There are four games in Dayton. They call that the first four. I believe that's eight teams playing for four spots. It's two games featuring the lowest four automatic qualifiers, and then two games featuring the lowest four at-large bids. I think we're going to double that to, and we'll call it an early eight. Why not? An early eight. So eight play-in games, four of the automatic qualifier version, and four of the last eight at-large teams on the board in version. And we'll probably have it in two different sites, whether it's Dayton all the time. I have no reason to think that Dayton won't be part of it. And I don't know where else to put them. If Dayton is going to maintain that spot as the first four, and again, they embrace the heck out of it, I don't know where you're going to put the other one. Ogden, Utah, Missoula, Montana. I remember a time where the first round of the NCAA tournament used to be in Boise and Missoula, Missoula, Montana and Ogden, Utah, and we'd get a late night game from there. Maybe that's the way we'll go. I don't know. But I think at the very least, we will expand the field from 68, I think I have this right, to 76. And I don't know how fast we can do that, but I don't think we would damage the integrity of the NCAA tournament at that point. But I think when you go to 90, I think we're starting to do a little damage.
Yeah.
And but then again, money. They don't care about the integrity of the tournament when money is involved. It'll depend on how much more money exactly is involved there. All right, Panthers and 49ers Sunday.
Oh, sorry, did that come out?
Yeah, it did. It was very reactionary. Our friend Trey Wingo from ESPN was down here. Gosh, trying to remember how long ago this was. And I believe when he was here, it coincided with the eclipse. Right? So there's a photo of Trey using the protective glasses looking up at the eclipse, because you have to wear protective glasses to look up at the eclipse. For whether it's either that or this game is Medusa, I would advise not staring directly at this game. Don't make eye contact.
Okay, so I shouldn't sit down and watch it for 3 hours.
Like, through your television, maybe.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe it's okay through a television.
Okay.
But if you're at the game...
Oh, no.
I would wear protective lenses.
Yeah, not enough beer in the world to help that game.
We need, like, serious UV protection for this. All right, so the 49ers have a great defense and a... mid, as my kid likes to say, mid offense.
I literally had to look up the lingo for this because I'm out of that range.
I am too, but I have a 14-year-old, so I'm getting new lingo, and it's very funny to me. We got a churro from a local establishment, and he's psyched for it. He took a bite out of it. He goes, "Dad, this is mid."
Wow.
I'm like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know what that means. Matt Rhule is still the head coach. Baker Mayfield is still the starting quarterback. In the latter case, really, what are the options? PJ Walker is not really an option.
No.
I guess Matt Corral, you could convince yourself that, let's take a look. I don't think so. And I'm not even sure that when healthy, Sam Darnold is an option here either, but. So Baker Mayfield's going to be the starting quarterback.
Yeah.
In the former case, Rhule isn't dumb. He has to know the end game here. So, but I don't understand what would be gained from punting on Rhule now. Rhule did have conversation with the big boss about a lot of things.
No, he didn't talk to me about that. We talked about trying to beat the Saints, and then this week it was, he's, just kind of this week. So, I'm not going to talk a lot about my conversations with Dave, but, he wants to win like everybody else wants to win, so he's a really good owner and a good man, and to keep doing the best I can for him.
Yes, David Tepper is not going to say, hey, Matt, if you don't beat the Saints, you're done.
Right.
If you don't beat the Cardinals, you're done. Well, he beat the Saints, so if you don't beat the Cardinals, you're done. Not every day is not an ultimatum. I know how fans want this to go, and I will just simply tell fans, be patient, because you're going to get your wish maybe before the end of the season. I don't even know if it's before the end of the season, because again, this ain't college. You're not Wisconsin. Unless you're auditioning somebody on your staff, you're not. There's just no reason to do it, and to be perfectly honest, I am not a fan of tanking.
No.
Right? I am not that guy. Because I think that intentionally sabotaging your season is counterproductive to what you want to do. What you would like to do is see some growth. Forget about your head coach. You would like to see some growth, especially from young players. By the way, Jeremy Chinn is out. That's bad. Right?
Yeah, bad, bad.
So I don't think you're going to see a coaching change until we get well into the season, more likely after the season.
I mean, you might as well just ride it out. It's terrible already, so.
It's not going to get better.
No.
It's not going to get better. All right, here's Rhule in terms of have people around the world reached out?
Have any of the colleges that have openings reached out to you?
I'm not going to talk about that. I'm the Carolina Panther head coach, and that's it.
That's such a tough question. What do we do? Like, we want you out here in the media room. We can't wait for you to leave. Like, Matt's a nice guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be excited to deal with Matt. He's doing the best he can. Even if it's not very good, he's doing the best he can. Gives you an honest day's work. I don't know. All right, let me get to some college football here. 5 ACC games to consider this weekend. Florida State's at NC State. Wolfpack are a 3-point favorite, which, I don't know, seems a little low to me. ACC Network, 8 o'clock. Bounce back games for both schools, right? FSU soundly beaten by Wake Forest. NC State capitulated ultimately to Clemson's, the program's greatness in Death Valley. I have my own thoughts on what... I believe that NC State can be better than they are right now. This team can be better than they have shown right now. If we are being honest, lucky to win against East Carolina, a lot of self-inflicted wounds, but escaped. Not really that great against Texas Tech, the other Power Five, the only Power Five team they played to that point. But effective enough, got a win. I didn't like a couple of things from that game. They crushed Charleston Southern and Connecticut because they were supposed to. And the Clemson game left me wanting more. Not in terms of a win, but in terms of how they presented themselves offensively. And I said this at the beginning of the year. The opportunity is there. Are you willing to let Devin Leary do his thing? And it appears that they aren't. And they won't. And they're not going to change who they are, which is let defense do the heavy lifting and offense pick us up where needed. And I don't believe that's the formula to win the ACC, unless Clemson is terrible. The opportunity was there last year to win the ACC because Clemson offensively was awful. They're not awful. Clemson is actually very good. NC State was not going to beat them by playing it close to the vest, and that's what they did. And that's what they do, but I still think there is room for more for them if Dave Doran is willing to find, no offense, Tim Beck, Dave Doran's got to find an offensive system that is explosive. They are not explosive. I think the Seminoles will struggle to score against NC State. I also think the Wolfpack will struggle to score against Florida State. I just think the Wolfpack will struggle less to score. UNC is at Miami. Hurricanes are a 3.5-point favorite. This is 4 o'clock on ESPN2. I think the first team to legitimately establish the run has the upper hand in this game. I'm not sure either team will. But the first team to do it, I think, will win the game. With that said, the only known quantity in this game is North Carolina's quarterback, Drake May. So I will take the Tar Heels in this game, but anything could happen here. Anything could happen. It is in Coral Gables. Duke is at Georgia Tech, 4 o'clock on the ACC Network. Blue Devils are a 3.5-point road favorite. Got to keep their foot on the gas, Duke. Have to. Tech was inspired by a coaching change last week, and they won at Pitt. Pitt is a compromised team, ranked because they just couldn't fall far enough. The Blue Devils can run and pass and cover. So to me, unless Georgia Tech overwhelms Duke at the line of scrimmage, the Blue Devils will win this game. And the next 2 weeks for Duke, ultimately, it's not Duke's season, but if they have designs on bookending their 2012 trip to the ACC championship with the final Coastal Division title, they got to go 2-0 in the next 2 weeks. And if they do that, kind of in the driver's seat, unless Miami also beats North Carolina, in which case that would set up the showdown Miami and Duke later in the season, probably to win it. Army is at Wake. I hate these games because you just never know when you play a team like Army what you're going to get. The Knights were competitive in a couple of games against Sunbelt competition and good Sunbelt teams, but they're ultimately 1-3. Their only win is Villanova. I think the Deacs have a favorable runway to get to 7-1 and the trip to NC State in the first Saturday of November. I think Wake wins this game. I think Wake will be 7-1 when they get there. Clemson at Boston College. BC is getting 20.5 points at home, 7:30 on ABC. My question is, why is this game on network television?
Yeah.
I saw, like, what? Why are they putting it? Did ABC have no other options?
Right. No reruns?
Unless, right. Don't, like, different
Shark
strokes.
Shark Tank? Yeah.
Shark Tank. Right. Look, I know the Eagles have a good quarterback, and I know they just beat Louisville. But unless you are just playing a hunch here that BC is going to have something, or Clemson is coming down because Florida State's next and that's a big game for Clemson, unless you are playing that sort of a hunch, I just don't see this being competitive. No Brian Brisee, though. So he has a kidney infection. He'll miss the second straight game. You know, it's funny. We were just listening to some of the questions from the press conference earlier this week, and I understand the obligation to ask Matt about have colleges reached out, but it almost seems like people want this to happen. And I feel bad for Matt, who I happen to like a lot as a guy. He seems embattled. How is he handling all of this?
You know, better than you'd think, probably. And it's one thing, and I can say, in all honesty, I kind of admire about Matt. I mean, his process has become a punchline to a lot of people, let's be honest. But he only works on the thing in front of him. I mean, when he says, we got to look at the tape, we've got to fix it in practice, I mean, that's just how he lives his life. So, I mean, he gets it. He understands. Everybody kind of gets it and understands. But he's really kept everything not about, oh, my God, the quarterback's this or that. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, we've got to work on this particular thing in practice. And honestly, it's all you can really do.
Darren Gann is joining us here, Panthers.com. You're the man who wrote earlier this season about Baker Mayfield and the promise and all of that. And I was convinced that Baker Mayfield is a guy who could actually be very good. And I am not necessarily unconvinced of that based on what we've seen through 4 weeks. But where are the areas that Baker specifically can improve? And I know you wrote about Baker Mayfield at Panthers.com.
Yeah. I think one specific area would be not throwing the ball to the other team. I think not throwing it in places where J.J. Watt's hands happen to be.
Right.
I mean, and that's me kind of being flip, but, you know, he's got specific things he's got to clean up. One of the things I think is interesting to me about Baker is just watching this phenomenon unfold is the reason I think a lot of people are scratching their heads about what's going on with him right now is he's never shown this. Even last year in Cleveland when he was hurt, he didn't look quite like this. I mean, he looks like, and this is me being flip again, he looks like a guy who rolled in a week before training camp. Mm-hmm. He looks like a guy who's still learning how to do this here. But he hadn't had all the reps you would love for a guy to have. If they could get in a time machine and trade for him in April, I imagine they would want to. And I imagine the product we see would look a lot better. But at the same time, can't do that. And it's a little bit of, you know, as the great underrated band Dawes said, it's a little bit of everything. It's receivers breaking off a route short. It's protection coming through at the wrong time at certain times. But mostly it's been Baker. And until he plays better, it's going to be tough for them to break out of this skid. Oh, congratulations, you're playing the number one ranked defense in the league this week.
Yes, it's not supposed to get better against the 49ers, but football is a weird game, and you just never. I look at the 49ers as three quarters of a football team. They have a great defense, and the offense is at times good enough, and at other times they put up 10, and the quarterback drops back out of the end zone at Denver. So,
and listen, let's be honest, Adam Gold. You did this show in April. Would you rather have Jimmy Garoppolo or Baker Mayfield? And I think it's still an honest question. I mean, mm-hmm. It's reasonable. I mean, we didn't think Jimmy would be back on the field right now for the reason he's back on the field. But at the same time, and that was an open question throughout the offseason.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's a fair one. I mean, Jimmy's got his own, you know, issues. And I think most people, given that choice, well, let me say it this way. If you ask 32 general managers that question this offseason, it would not have been 32-0 in either direction.
Oh, no. It would have been pretty close down the middle, to be perfectly honest.
Probably.
Because Jimmy has a history of figuring out how to win games, although he does a lot of very silly things like drop back out of the end zone. You know, it's funny. You remember that because you and I probably talked about it. I don't remember April. I don't remember 2 days ago.
Yeah. I have a short memory if you're a quarterback, a cornerback, or a radio host.
Exactly. I don't know what I might have made predictions yesterday that were woefully wrong, and I just have to continue to move on. All right, latest injury, Jeremy Chinn. That's a bad one. He is such a catalyst for them. How do they cover for this, and where are they in terms of health, especially on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, that one's kicking the shorts. There's no lie. I mean, there's no way to spin that. That's not great. Jeremy's one of those guys. I mean, he has quickly and at a young age become kind of the character of the place. He is young to be a conscience of anything, but Jeremy's one of those guys people point to. So yeah, that's not easy. And it's not going to be one guy. They always mix and match a lot of coverages. I think there'll be times you'll see Miles Hartsfield back there. There'll be times you see Sean Chandler back there. There'll be times you see Justin Burris back there, probably. I mean, Burris is a guy who, you know, he's a salty old vet, started a bunch of games for him the last couple of years, knows where to be. Now, is he as physical as Jeremy? Of course not. Not a lot of safeties in the NFL necessarily are, but yeah, they're just going to have to do that one by committee. Safety by committee is not nearly as popular as running back by committee, but that's kind of the spot they're in right now.
Darren Gant, Panthers.com, is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. I just want to go back to the offense for a second because we have this.
He's not.
Well, I'm going back to a good spot of the offense. I'm going back to Christian McCaffrey. I mean, it's not like they can rely on him more than they are. Is he being, like, I hate to say this, is he being used enough? But I'm not sure he's being used enough.
Right. And again, it's funny that we're having this conversation. All these things come around eventually. A year ago, it was, are they using him too much? Or are they driving him into the ground? I think, you know, as with most things in life, moderation is the key. But somewhere between the 30 touches a game from the first couple games of last year before he got hurt in Houston and 8 carries last week. I mean, that's obviously not ideal, but you know, there's so much chicken and egg to all this. I was talking to a coworker today. I said, in football, everybody always makes it about one thing, and it's very seldom about one thing. It's the rare time when it's about one thing. So, with Christian, you know, you want to kind of find that happy medium, giving the ball some but not too much, and that's a tricky balance to strike. He looks good. I mean, he's healthy. He's popped up on the injury report for, you know, the ankle, the thigh, and as he joked the other week, for taking a leak in the middle of practice. And documenting this is our number one priority at Panthers.com. Hey, yo. But no, I mean, when he's out there, he's one of the most dynamic players in the game. So I think they want to be cognizant of not doing too much and not jeopardize that. But at the same time, yeah, I think when you simplify this thing, what do the Carolina Panthers need to do? They need to put the ball in Christian's hands. They need to get it in DJ's hands. They need to not turn it over. I mean, the way this defense is playing, I think to harken back to the old days, it's almost like Rodney Peete in 02. I mean, is he going to put up 30 points a game? He's probably not. But the way that defense is playing, he doesn't have to. So I am a big Occam's razor guy. The simplest answer is often best. Strip it down. Do the things you're good at. Do not as many of the things you're struggling at. So if it's me, I would make sure Christian had 18-20 carries this week. And you try to hit the high probability targets to people like DJ and get him in open field and make plays. I don't know that Laviska Shenault's going to be able to go this week. He's on the injury report with a hamstring. Tune in to Panthers.com later this afternoon for the latest on that. Have I hit my plug quota for today?
Look, I hit your plug quota. It's fine.
I appreciate it.
I appreciate you staying on brand. Here's the thing, because this conversation reminds me of conversations we had about Cam Newton. About, well, you don't want to have him take too many hits because because
but he's your best player, so go do the thing.
Football is unfortunately very temporary for these guys, and the longer you try to protect them, all it means is that you're not getting the best out of them for you. So trying to preserve Christian McCaffrey's career is a bad idea for the team, and it's also a bad idea for Christian McCaffrey because if he's not getting the ball, he's not putting up yards, and he's not justifying the contract that you already gave him. So I would think 18 to 20 carries is the minimum. Like, I think he should be touching the ball in some way, shape, or form between 25 and 30 times a game.
Yeah. And, I mean, 30's a lot, but, you know, again, another one of the problems is it's hard to get any one person other than the center that many touches in a game when you're only running 53 plays
well,
a game.
Well, that is a problem.
So, convert some third downs. You know, again, if they convert third downs, they have more plays, more opportunity to get Christian involved, would take care of a lot. But, oh, by the way, when you're last in the league in third down conversions, go do more of those. Not as easy done as said.
Yeah, look, their offense has been a tough watch, and until that improves a little bit, they basically have no chance to beat good teams if the offense is what the offense is. As it turns out, they haven't played too many, I think, really good teams at this point. This is the best team I think they will have faced so far this year, and again, I think San Francisco is, again, three-quarters of a team. They are super dynamic in terms of Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle, and that will be the challenge for this Panthers team. Still feel good about Baker?
I don't think. I mean, it's October. What are you going to do? There's not a lot available on the street right now.
Right, there's not an option.
So, I mean, and that's why I do not want to be characterized as apologizing for or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I just think that because he's so unlike what we've seen from him over the course of his career, I mentioned this on Panthers.com yesterday, or maybe it was a couple of days ago in the Ask the Old Guy mailbag. He has always been at his best in the middle of the year, in November and December rather than September, October. He's a guy, he changed offensive coordinators a lot in Cleveland, so he's kind of used to that, and he's been through this process before and has generally been better, his best month of passer ratings, November. So
okay.
I don't know. We'll see.
We're almost there.
At 1-3, the clock's ticking, and they got to figure it out fast for a lot of reasons, as you know. But, I guess there's reason to think that it's not always going to look like the way it looked Sunday.
Yeah, I think, obviously, there's only one way to go.
Sure.
We can only go up, and that's a good thing. Ask the Old Guy. Stay tuned to Panthers.com. Darren will have all of the skinny on everything. I appreciate it, man. I'll talk to you soon.
You got it, buddy.
You got
anytime.
It.
Anytime.
All right.
See y'all.
Darren Gant. He was staying on brand is what Darren
he
was.
He did.
What Darren was doing.
This is the Adam Gold Show.